I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to It's Your Funeral, the podcast where we interview guests about the most important day of their afterlives. As ever, I'm here with Instagram's most cancelled influencer, Sam Hammond, aka Vom Cruise. How are you, Sam?
Very well, thank you. Sat in a beautiful English country garden.
This is our first garden podcast, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I just saw a squirrel run into a garage.
Shoot it. I'm sure you must be tempted.
I'm a vegan, mate.
You can eat them.
That's true. And the dulcet tones of our guest today, author and screenwriter John Niven. How are you, John?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, the squirrels, there's a lot of squirrels in this garden. But my mate in Scotland said, yeah, you should shoot them, you can eat them. He goes, but you need about six of them to make a ragu for like two people. I'm like, mate, I'm...
Yeah, squirrel ragu. I'm a delicacy where?
You could eat a dog shit if you wanted to, but you don't have to.
Sort of shite you see Jamie and his mate knocking up for the weekend, isn't it? I'm like, skinning alive six squirrels to make pasta for two people, it just, you know, it seems too... I mean, I like meat, but no. Sorry, I mean, vegan nation here.
No, it's fine. I'm not offended by that. I mean... But I'd imagine that squirrels are quite disease ridden. Maybe not these posh Buckinghamshire squirrels, but you know.
What are you saying about my squirrels, mate?
We are in. We're
going to be junky squirrels, are they?
We're in High Wycombe in John Niven's lovely garden. Thank you so much for having us. How has your last weird year been?
Weirdly enough, not that weird. I mean, it's not that much. I mean, I get up in the morning, I pad into the study, I tap away, and you know, it's like, and a kind of weird Larry David way, I've kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Like, you get to turn down, you don't get to go to anything you don't want, and nobody's going to anything, you know? And it's just this past week, as you know, we're getting towards the end of lockdown as we're recording this, and I've just looked at my diary, and there's a few things, like lunch, dinner, this, that, starting to appear.
Us cunts knocking on your door.
Yeah. That I don't mind, I don't have to go anywhere. You guys were kind enough to come here. But you start looking and you think, oh, fuck, I've got to go to that, and do I really want to do that? And,
yeah.
You know, it's quite good, but it's just nobody's doing anything, you know?
And hasn't affected your creativity at all?
Nah, not really, no.
You had a book out just as the first lockdown hit, didn't
it? It literally came out the week, the first lockdown. That's the whole other
did you miss out on doing a book tour then?
Nah, some weird stuff happened though, because you had to, yeah, book tour wasn't going to happen, but we had to, it was all just like, you know, now what people quite like is if you offer them signed books,
yeah,
via Twitter and stuff like that. And then I couldn't, the lockdown came the day I was meant to get into like a rough trades warehouse to sign these 500 books. So then you had to get inserts sent out to you and then sign them and stick it. Anyway, just a whole palaver.
Yeah.
But
so done what they did with the Captain Tom one. I thought they got busted with this. They were doing signed. I mean, look, I'm not disrespecting Captain Tom, what he did
for
with
once.
I might be about to.
Well, you know, I'm waiting for the war crime stories from Burma to come out. But,
you know, as we all are.
Yeah, but his family were obviously milking this for everything they fucking can, right? They released this book the other day, and there were signed Captain Tom books. Everyone's like, you know, get these. There were loads of money. And then someone complained because they were quite obviously like printed on.
This is clearly not the signature of a 100-year-old man.
Yeah. Well, they were printed on, and they're all exactly the fucking same. And these people were paying like, you know, paying a lot of money to get this official signed thing from the dead guy, and then it wasn't him. It was printed on.
Yeah, you're paying top dollar. You want at least a person. I mean, I offer a personal message. I don't know what Captain Tom's giving you there. I could, you know.
I like the idea that Sam thinks that all signed things are actually signed by the people who they claim to have been signed by. Surely that's an industry of fakery. Surely.
Who signs yours, John?
Well, if you guys hang around for a bit,
I need a job.
Yeah. Little, we go out your back, and there's like a. Yeah. a load of youngsters in a garage somewhere.
Well, you know, thankfully for me, I mean, I guess if you're somebody, I don't know, you know, J.K. Rowling,
you know, yeah.
Whoever, you know, you get like 5,000 to sign, it must be, you know.
You could do that thing Ringo did. Did you see what he did?
No.
A few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
The video. Yeah, he put a video up and he's like, from November the 1st, no more signings. Don't send me anything. They'll get chucked. It'll get chucked. He's like, no more. Okay, no more. And then he goes, peace and love, peace and love. He's
like, fucking leave me alone, fuck off. Peace and love. But it was like that Simpsons episode, wasn't it, where he's with Marge in the painting.
Right.
Marge has done a painting of Ringo back at the height of Beatlemania and sent it to him, and it cuts to him finally answering her letter in 1995 or whatever it is.
Right.
It was like 30 years later. He's just catching up in the fan mail. He's getting it all done.
It makes me think, how did Ringo doing Thomas the Tank Engine come about? Was it his idea? It can't have been his idea. Like, how did they book him to do the voiceover?
Well, he had a brief career as an actor, didn't he?
Did he?
Sort of like 70s, yeah. He was in a few things.
They're just bored with nothing to do, weren't they, probably?
Yeah,
they were all like retired at 27 with like 100 million in the bank.
And massive coke smacking booze habits to support at that point. Yeah, he was bang on. He was an early adopter of Freebase, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah, he's a big Freebaser. I think John Belushi's book talks about going to some A-frame house in the Hollywood Hills, and he walks in and it's Ringo Starr and Ronnie Wood on the pipe.
Oh, no way.
So that'd be a bit sort of 1980, 81.
Still at it?
I think he got sober in the late 80s, maybe. Oh, what are these fucks? But yeah, he was, you know.
He looks pretty good for it.
Well, the Beatles, you know, yeah, you're probably doing good gear.
Yeah, you'd like to think
you've been in the Beatles. Somebody's sorting out some proper racket.
Yeah, yeah, you'd want the best stuff.
Not getting it off us.
Did you see that video a few years ago when it was Liverpool Capital of Culture? And they invited Ringo back to like do a speech on the where the liver birds are, and they go, Ringo, you're home, you're back here. What do you want to say? And he's like, hello everyone. And then they said, would you ever move back to Liverpool? And he's like, no. He's like, I live in LA. It's amazing. He's like, looking shit here. Everyone started booing.
You know what? That Hollywood's pretty good, but what I really need to be doing is getting back to Sefton Park.
He's just like, absolutely not. It's fucking rubbish.
No offence to any of our Liverpudlian audience there, who I know wouldn't take that personally in any way.
Unless you're Liverpool fans.
My family are all Scousers, and I know they're very loyal to.
I love Liverpool. There's some good, nice areas there. It's like really good people. I used to work there. But it's just funny how he was just like, just so rude. He just doesn't give a fuck.
Really good.
Yeah, as you say, they are people that are kind of partial to enjoying their hometown, shall we say.
They certainly haven't forgiven Boris Johnson for whatever he wrote. He wrote something in one of his articles 20 years ago, and they don't.
Oh, yeah, you've got to love the Scousers for that. I mean, you can't buy the sun.
No, it's just like that.
We're done.
Yeah, exactly.
So, John, I'm going to ask a question that we always ask our guests to do with this being about your fantasy funeral. What is your funeral experience?
You mean in terms of funerals that I've enjoyed?
You can take it any way you want. It's a purposely vague question.
You mean what would my funeral be like?
No, I guess it's just more like getting before we go into yours particularly, like what's your, more like what you said at first, what's your experience of having been to funerals? How do you feel about them? What's your attitude towards funerals in general?
Well, it's difficult. Obviously, I'm of an age now, I'm in my early 50s, where you've lost a few people close to you. But at the same time, anything involving kind of being in a church or a crematorium, I'm immediately humble shirtless before we begin.
Yeah.
It's just such a powerfully, you know, I don't know about you guys' background was, but I didn't have a particularly religious upbringing.
No.
But you'd have to go to church a few times, like, you know, Easter, Christmas, you'd have to go with a school.
Yeah.
And the sight of sort of stained glass windows and pews and that, to this day, I just literally tearful boredom.
It is boring.
I walk in there, so you know.
I remember being like 7 and saying to, because my family weren't religious at all. My dad would have said it's bollocks, but I had to go. I grew up in a village in the middle of nowhere, and I had to go to a Church of England primary school. So everyone was talking about God all the time at school, and like, you know, teachers drilling it into us. And I said to my dad, I want to go to church, because all these kids were going to church. So my dad was like, you want to go? Yeah, I was like 7, and I was like, I didn't know what it was. Right? I just heard these kids saying it was fun, like Sunday school. Whatever. I was like, Dad, I want to go. And he's like, all right, I'll take you on Sunday. So my I was like, all right. So I got up early on Sunday with my dad, and I went there, and after about half an hour, I was like, can we go?
What, he stayed in there with you?
No, he took me there and sat in there, because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I was like hyperactive child, and he was just like, I was like, can we go? And he's like, yes, we can.
straight to the pub.
Aversion therapy.
Yeah, it was. He was very smart to do that, and I was like, never want to go there again.
Yeah, maybe if he'd forbidden it from me, if he said, no, you can never go to this place, you'd have been really religious, right?
Yeah.
You'd have been
yeah.
like, the forbidden fruit must be tasted.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Do you think even the people who not only go to church, but kind of judge people who don't go to church, find it boring too, but just can't admit it?
I don't know. I mean, you've got to figure some of them are into it. I don't know. I guess if it's a really glib thing to say, I guess if you believe it's sort of fun.
Must be fun to believe.
If you believe that you can do pretty bad stuff and then you can just say, ask for forgiveness and then you will be forgiven. And then when you die, you're going to go somewhere great.
I'm going to do it anyway. I mean, come on, what's the downside? You know, deathbed conversion, it's got to be a winner.
Yeah.
Shit's real, you know, it's all going to be good. But the upside in Scotland, though, is the after parties are usually pretty good, you know?
Are they called the wakes there too? It's the wake, isn't it?
Yeah, wake, sorry. After parties are somewhat disrespectful.
No,
it's VIP.
you get a wristband.
Where's the after show? But yeah, they generally turn into a bit of a sort of rammy. And as they're always, once you reach my age, they're always interesting in the sense that you will see people who you only see once a decade. Like when somebody dies, or rarer now, somebody of my age group, probably second marriage. But it's a death or a marriage or some shit like that.
Can you give us an example of one of the most raucous funeral after parties you've been to?
My brother's was pretty good. That got pretty messy. That went on quite a while.
How long's quite a while?
Early hours the next day, oh, okay. Sort of thing.
So we're not talking like a week long.
No.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
But it was a funeral.
That's what I want for mine. Yeah.
You could set aside the fund for that. Say, look, you know, it's a very sad day. However, I have £3,000 set aside. Load of pills here.
Exactly.
What I don't want is get stuck in.
Exactly. And it's very unlikely I'm going to get married. So the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to. Not make any of my friends go on my stag do, but tell them that they have to have then a week-long funeral party for me at the end instead of a stag do that they're allowed to go.
And that, you raise an interesting point there. I'd kind of rather go to a funeral than a stag do or a wedding, you know. But when you're the wedding invite now, how are we getting married in Morocco? Please fork out please, 2.5 G's to come to my wedding.
Yeah,
I'm like, are you mental?
Yeah.
Or indeed the stag night. Yeah, we're going to Reykjavik. I'm like,
I went to Vegas for one stag do that cost... It cost me about £2,000, right? And all the boys were taking so many drugs that within 10 minutes of leaving the hotel rooms, they were so afraid. They were so afraid of being caught with drugs that they wouldn't take them from the hotel rooms. So within 10 minutes of leaving the hotel rooms, we'd always have to go back to the hotel rooms.
So you basically spent the time in the hotel room.
Exactly. And so we basically could have just gone to Norwich. Yeah. We could have been anywhere, honestly. And I don't partake in coke, which is what they're all doing. So
man, that must have been boring for you.
I basically watched a Mad Men marathon on AMC for most of that weekend in Vegas.
And did an 8-hour, 10-hour flight each way.
10-hour flight each way. I mean, obviously there were some funny stories that I was kind of party to, but...
But you know what? You could have heard them anyway in the pub back home. I could have been happy to consume that shit secondhand.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
I went to Vegas once for a wedding, and it was a fun wedding. But I was there for like 4 days, and really I should have only been there for 3. And I wasn't there with loads of mates. There was only a few people at this wedding, like family. The last day, it was fucking boiling hot. It was so hot, it was unbelievable. And everywhere was just full of cunts. There was just cunts everywhere I looked. And I just thought, fuck it, I'm just staying in.
You do see some humanity in Vegas, don't you? It's like, we're Americans, can I go? You know, they really think we go there to party, and you'll see them walking around pounding beers at, like, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, just walking up down the street. And yeah, we drove up there once, and it was this family, I'm not kidding, you know, 3 kids, 2 parents, none of them could have weighed less than, you know, £200,
yeah.
like 20 yeah. stone. Standing there with those gigantic big gulp cups,
yeah.
looking at that fake Eiffel Tower
yeah.
I got there, and you're like, fucking hell.
The best side of Vegas, because I've been a few times, because I lived out in LA for a while, and the best side is like Old Town Vegas. I don't
yeah.
know if you've been there, like what was the old strip. And then around there are some good dive bars. And I had, I'm not sure if I've told this story on here before, but we had a really great night out in one of these dive bars around that side of town. And I was with a friend of mine called Chris, and we met a couple of girls, and we just had a really great all-nighter, like playing pool, drinking loads and loads and loads. And then at the end, we were like, okay, well, do you want to come back to our hotel? And we had a normal hotel on the strip. And one of the girls was like, yeah, I'll drive us. And I guess so drunk, it didn't even cross my mind that obviously that's a horrific idea.
That's how Tupac got killed.
So we got into her car, and I got into the passenger seat.
The death seat.
And we drive up onto the slip road of the freeway. And she just slammed straight into the back of a car that had stopped to try and get onto the freeway because there was one of those flashing red lights, I guess. And I was so drunk that I was like, I'll deal with this. It wasn't so hard that we were injured, but it was like a bang, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll deal with this. I got out, and as I walked around the car to their driver, a woman gets out and just goes to me, I've been drinking all night, can we just say nothing happened? And I was like, yes, we can.
That works for us.
Absolutely.
That's fucking brilliant.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, happens on this slip road stays on this slip road. But yeah, it was just one of those random nights. And do you know those stories where you're like, did that actually happen? Because it's so random and you were so drunk. But yeah. So John, have you given in your life... So the reason this podcast came about is because I have fantasized about my own funeral before. Is it something that you've ever given much thought to before we asked you on this podcast?
Well, it obviously crosses your mind. I think it does. However, being a sort of 50-something smoker, that's one I try to kind of not fantasize about too much because it stops being funny at some point. But no, obviously, we all picture the various scenarios. It depends how you see it, though, doesn't it? Because there's the you're really old sort of scenario, you know, in which case there's probably hardly going to be anyone there outside your kids and the few old bastards like you have managed to last that long. And that's the dream scenario.
And whoever's changing your nappies.
Exactly. But the other scenario is, you know, you go young and you're hoping for a decent turnout in that case, you know.
I think we've all three of us have reached a point where, you know, going young would have been like romantic about 10 years ago. Right now it's just makes me tragic.
No, it depends. The only difficult part of this is kind of once you have kids, you know, and you're kind of like, that's a tough break for kids. Unless you see, nature's kind of fantastic like that, because if you know, my mum's nearly 80 now. And if your parents live to be old enough, they go from the kind of, you know, when you're a little kid, it's like the thought of not having your parents is just unthinkable. Mm. And then as you get older, you're like, that would be painful, but I could get... And then they live long enough to become a gigantic pain in the fucking arse. You're actually like, you know, nature prepares you. You're like, you know what? I will be sad, and you know, I've learned sad memories in my childhood, but you know, you've had a good run. And if you go around my house unplugging things and turning them off at the wall one more time, your fucking funeral is going to arrive sooner than you might have fucking thought. It becomes that kind of thing. But
I'm assuming your mum's not a podcast listener.
Yeah, no, not a mum. I love you, but you know, leave those fucking plugs. Jesus,
what is it about the plug? Is it just turning them off, turning everything off at the wall?
You don't get that. The old people that do
because they think that it's going to charge them.
Either charge them or maybe the electricity is just going to turn bad.
I've got a mate whose wife does that. And
you do get the occasional younger person who does
that. Weird as fuck. I'm like, I go to the house, I was coming to my house, turns on my plug. I'm like, stop turning my plugs off.
Yeah, I mean, the worst.
She does it at your house.
Yeah. The worst one is you got, you know, your phone. You stick your phone in the charger that you assume, as it should be, it's turned, and then you look an hour later, my phone's not charged. Ah, pensioner has turned this off at the wall for safety. I'm like, it fucking drives me.
It must be something that was said years ago, like turn them off, it's safer or something.
It must be from the days of rationing.
Or it's a money thing, you think, you know. Likes turning the toaster off too. I've got to stick, you know that horrible sensation, you go to put the toaster down and it just won't respond. Because it's almost like, you know, it's a terrible sensation.
You don't need
like,
that in your life.
I want my toaster
this is real first world problems here, isn't it? You have to go 10 to 15 inches to turn it on at the wall.
People are going to be listening to this. He wants his own mother to die. He turns his toaster off. This is a terrible
You are the perfect guest for this podcast, John.
I saw a toaster the other day that is clear so you can see the toast browning. And then you get it out at the right moment.
That sounds expensive.
Yeah, I can't afford one. But it's a Tory device, but it's very, very good.
Occasionally you wonder, would there be a decent fight at my funeral? I've seen some good tussles at funerals.
How do those fights tend to come about?
They tend to not get into full fights, but you tend to find when you've maybe got a friendship group who kind of know each other since childhood, and like we were saying a minute ago, only see each other every 10 years or so, especially as you get into middle age, you've got all those sort of competing personal agendas and rivalries and, you know,
resentments
and things, you know, that kind of, and somebody will say something snide to somebody and it'll kind of, you know, it'll escalate.
So it probably starts as like banter.
Yeah.
And then drinks get involved.
Get involved, yeah, yeah.
And so, then more personal banter.
People get a bit aggro about the will as well, don't they?
Oh, wills are great. Yeah, I've had a couple of great well experiences. Yeah.
Go on.
All right. I was sure. Okay.
Shouldn't have said that.
an aunt of mine dies a few years ago, and she didn't have any kids. And I said, my mum said, oh, I'm sure whatever she leaves will just be. It was me and my sister and three other cousins. She goes, it'll just be split between us, you and your cousins. And my mum had looked. This was her sister, mm-hmm. who she'd looked after pretty much exclusively for the last year or two of her life. She had Alzheimer's. Yeah. Anyway, no. It turns out she had favourites. So there comes in, basically, all these cousins and my sister get handy like 25, 30 grand each. Oh, wow. Me and my mum got a couple of G's. So I am pissing myself because I'm upset for my mum. She should have got cut in, probably,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
And, but I don't, you know, I'm fortunate enough that it's not that big a deal. Mm. But I got up to Scotland for the funeral, right? And my sister's coming out from Glasgow on the train. And I pick her up at the station. The first thing she says, she gets into the car, she goes, I feel so bad about this will set. And I went, the good news is you don't have to feel bad because, you know, the will is just a legal document of a mad, bitter old cow. It doesn't prohibit normal human decency. So what you do is just take that money and split it equally between me and mum, and then you won't feel bad anymore. And she goes, I'm not gonna do that. I went, well, then you have to feel bad. Like, that's the cash morality deal. We split. But anyway, we got to the funeral, and at this point, I'm kind of into it. I'm kind of enjoying the wind-up. One of the cousins is there who got the cat, and I kind of went... something about.
I see how these fights start now, John.
Well, I said joke. I went, well, if I were you, this is just me. I just whatever couple I'd been left, I just gave to my mum. I went, if you all took a few grand out of what you got, yeah, and gave it to my mum, my next one. He's drinking a pint, and he just goes, the will's the will! and bangs his glass down. Now, again, I went through my sort of, yeah, the will is just the legal document of a mad, bitter old cow, but it doesn't prohibit you. Yeah. You can do what you want with the money. Will's the will!
The sanctity of wills will not be broken by me.
Exactly. You know, the will is defined by God. No man on earth shall, you know, undo, you know, it's like, Jesus Christ.
That's amazing. I've not been left. The only thing I've been left, my nana died, my dad's mum, and she said, left in her will, that she wanted to give me and my brother each a signet ring. Now, signet rings, you know, no judgment, but are the last things that either me or my brother would ever wear. We've never worn any jewellery or anything.
You strike me as a signet ring wearer.
Never been a signet. Other than a
definitely an early 90s.
Other than a teenage thumb ring mistake, no jewellery has ever crossed my
being. That was just a sex
being.
Thing.
That was just a sex thing, exactly. So my dad kind of took it on himself. This is possibly the only ever example of my dad showing some knowledge about his two children, actually. He took us to breakfast in Soho one day and was just like, now, your grandmother wanted to leave you both a signet ring, but I knew that wouldn't be right. So here, and then you just gave us both 500 quid, and that was it.
Much more appreciated.
Which was much more appreciated. And also, but I also wonder whether actually that was a lot less than maybe the signet rings might have
but
cost,
actually,
I don't know.
This leads us on to an interesting thing that I hadn't thought of before at the funeral. What might add some spice to the whole fucking palaver is rather than the reading of the will, like in Hollywood movies, is always in a sort of lawyer's room with about the five immediate family. Do the reading of the will at the funeral when there's maybe, you know, a couple of hundred people there. And, you know, and go crazy with the will, you know, really leave unexpected shit to people who don't, you know, deserve it. And,
and it's under
like bargain hunt at the auction.
And the people are under the jeopardy pressure of knowing that everybody in the congregation is desperate to leave. So decisions have to be made really quickly as well.
Or indeed take it further and do a quiz. With cash prizes.
Oh,
for,
my
you know,
God,
live.
So good.
You could do that at yours if you want.
So good. Cash prizes.
Yeah, the whole estate has to go today. It's been carved up.
That's
fingers,
a brilliant
fingers
idea.
Under, you'll find there's a buzzer yes. in the pew in front of you.
Yeah, under your thing is a keypad, like Millionaire.
That'd be fucking great.
That would be the greatest funeral ever.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
That should definitely be a TV
show. Is it Chris Morrissey's funeral in the IT crowd when he's left the video?
I've not seen that.
He's left a tape video message for his kind of employees in the cover, which they play at the funeral. You know?
Right.
And then there's the bit where it's just for his sons. He goes, turn this off now, play it privately, because it's just for you. And his son's like, no, we can play it here. And they're like, right, the pension fund, because it's some really dark shit. He's got to sort out. Suddenly, I've turned that off.
I've never been left anything in a will, but I... before I had this mate called Carolyn, who was, she was really old. She died when she was 91. And before, the last time I saw her, she gave me a Ouija board. And she was like, right, when I'm gone, she said, I'm going to have a chat with you on here. And I was like, all right, nice one. She's a funny cunt. I've been on it a couple of times when I've been like on it. I got home at like 3 a.m. You know, and I've been like, I'm having a chat with Carolyn. You know, and I get on it and be like, you there?
Are you there? She's never fucking there.
Maybe you've not been drunk enough. So
she's busy with Diana and Prince Philip.
some acid and then she'll appear.
No, you say that. I've never, other than that, £2,000 skanking from my aunt, I've never been left anything.
Skanking. I felt fine about it, but it's fucking skanking.
I've never been left anything away because my dad died. My mum was much younger than my dad, so everything just went to my mum.
Yeah.
Although there was actually recently, he'd left in his will some shares in the company he worked for. Not a huge amount. And I hadn't thought, I guess I technically would go to you, like me and my sister down the line. But my mum kind of has all the documents and stuff. Anyway, my mum, just a few weeks ago, rings me up and goes, oh, son, I've had somebody on the phone looking to buy these shares, you know, from New York. I'm like, oh, yeah. Sounded immediately dodgy, and I'm like, yeah, next time we call, just give him my number. Guy, poor guy, sort of Indian guy, clearly in some mad boiler room type chop shop in New York. And yes, we have a client who I'm organising a hostile takeover of this company. We're looking to acquire small share blocks, so I've tracked you down through the public register. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, I'll, you know, I'd looked at the shares, they're trading at, it's like some property company that's obviously been hammered by the pandemic. They're trading at like $6 a share or something. Yeah, yeah. He goes, we might be able to offer you $15 to $18 a share. And I'm like, really? Can I ask why you're paying triple the market value? Well, as I say, we'll have to get you to sign a confidentiality agreement because we're organising this hostile takeover. It's kind of like, so you're organising a secret hostile takeover, yet you're cold calling madmen like me who, to tell them about it, but that should all be good. And the guy just pausing. Then he just goes through. He's got. He's obviously got a script. He just starts going through the script again. Yeah. And I went, does this work on anyone? Does anyone do this? And he's like, just goes back and starts to script. I hang up on him. And then I googled it, and yeah, it's a scam going on in America right now. They basically get you to put your shares in escrow, and they put the money in escrow, and then surprise, surprise, you can't. You know, so.
And they just target old people, don't they, the fuckers?
Yeah, yeah. That's around my mum back. And went, yeah, so yeah, the boat hasn't. You know, we're not getting triple market value for those shares.
Oh. So bleak, isn't it?
That was made up for the anti skanking if we'd sort of filled our boots there.
Yeah. So I'm assuming we're for your funeral. It's not going to be a religious one then, because you're not a religious person. But do you see it in a church, or do you see it?
No, I could.
Giving it any thought?
I like to do it in the garden here.
Yeah, squirrels.
Yeah, just dig a hole and a shroud sort of thing.
Can you be buried in your own garden?
I think you can if you own the house. Yeah, people do it. I mean, probably some permission you have to get council. Mm. It's just that, you know,
if a fox dug you up or something?
Well, it's all with a lot of foxes here, actually, too. But it used to be more that, you know, a house would be in a family for generations, but kids would probably fucking sell it the minute you're dead.
Yeah.
So I'm like, some poor bugger's got to move in, and like, your corpse is literally Trevor Jordash style, lying under the patio.
Buying Cromwell Street.
But...
in the walls.
They knocked that down, didn't they? It's gone.
Yeah, yeah, it's a shame, really. They should have kept it as a museum.
Yeah, it's a museum. I think they do tend to knock those places down, don't they?
I don't know if you've read the Gordon Byrne book, Happy Like Murderers.
I've read that.
The single most disturbing detail in that is like Fred and Rose had a massive wrought iron sign made for above the bed that just said cunt. Just the word cunt out of wrought iron above the marital bed.
Imagine Fred making that work, and his workmates are going, what are you doing there, Fred? And he's like, oh, fuck off.
Something for above the bed.
Yeah. That was not in any of the documentaries I've watched on the Fred and
Rose. It's a detail that you read that bit, and I'm like, I wish I hadn't read it. Just can't, you know. Kids come in the side. Can we watch cartoons in your bed this morning, Mum and Dad? Yeah, yeah, come on in. Cunt.
Oh my God.
I'd love that though, like in the garage, just in the back of the garage. I've got Fred and Rose's
wrought iron cunts. I mean, you wonder who got that at Sotheby's when the shirt went to Christie's.
Probably and available.
Someone's got that, haven't they?
Lot 452. Yeah.
Well, I've got bidders on the phone.
It's me and John.
John facing, using his aunt's £2,000.
Facing Sam. Yeah. Didn't cover it, bitch.
Oh my God.
Got my sister to come in with me, cover it.
I count myself as knowledgeable on things like that because I love to watch a documentary about all those serial killers and stuff. But
I don't know if you're in this cycle that I'm in now where you sort of watch some, you know, so because of lockdown, I guess, so you watch a documentary and it'll read you to rereading a book or reading a book about the related topic, you know? Mm. So I went with a Ripper thing on last year and I wound up rereading because Gordon Byrne's such a brilliant writer anyway. I reread somebody's husband, somebody's son, his Peter Sutcliffe book.
Yeah.
And it made me think, shall I read the Fred West one again? And I thought, you know what, once is enough for, you know,
there's like, another good one about Fred West called I forgot, the guy, it's the guy who did a podcast about it recently because he was he was the guy who coined the term the House of Horror as a reporter and right. stuff like that. And he wrote a book, I think it's called Howard something.
Howard Stern's?
Yeah. Yeah. It's from a different angle. It's a bit, it's not as sort of brutal. And
it's a cheerful take. Yeah. Cheerful romp down the
parody.
You know, great builder. Lovely. Affable neighbour.
Yeah.
Lovely family.
So sorry, strayed once again from the topic of my funeral.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's all good.
Fred's funeral was rubbish, supposedly.
Well, your funeral is in your garden, we know this. I'm thinking that we're imagining that you make it to the long innings.
Oh God, I'd like to. Let's imagine that. Yeah, let's indulge that fantasy.
The long innings. And
how many books do you reckon you've got left in?
Oh Jesus, Sam, that's a dark question.
I know, sorry.
Well, most novelists head drastically south in the sort of 60s, don't they? That seems to be when the talent burns out. But these are guys who probably start in the sort of 20s. I should start from my 30s, so I'm thinking maybe I'll push the envelope.
Didn't Hemingway shoot himself when he couldn't write anymore?
Yeah, he was 60, yeah. I think there were other issues going on.
Yeah.
There was alcoholism, the health issues and stuff, but that was a factor, apparently.
He crashed himself in a plane about three times, hadn't he?
Yeah, and he'd been had a go at some bulls and shit, and giant sharks trying to land. He was held together with pins, I think, and shit.
Yeah.
But I'm at an age now where sick, and I knew that when I was young and sort of starting out, and I thought, yeah, that's a way down the line, and I'm facing those problems. Now it's a bit close, I'm like, 60's not that unthinkable now.
Are there still like goals you want to achieve when it comes to how your books perform or what you want to write about or things like that?
One of those questions, how they perform, I've got very little influence over, I think, beyond writing as good a book as you can. Yeah. You can't really control that stuff. And what you want to write about, again, that's kind of with you're sort of lumbered with the kind of interests and perceptions you have. You know, often wish that my interests and perceptions were 9-year-old wizard kids or whatever might sell around. But sadly, they're kind of, as my German editor once said to me,
she stole the wizard kids idea, though, right?
My German editor, when he read the manuscript for which book was it? I think Sunshine Cruise Company, where one of the plot kicker is the death of this woman's husband who dies in agony impaled in this giant dildo in a sort of sex dungeon. And my German editor really rang me up and go, ah, John. Always with the ass. This was almost sort of heartfelt story, which has become, I told my daughter about this, it's become a sort of family catchphrase. Always with the ass, John. So I thought, I kind of wish you, sometimes the perceptions and the slant you have and things weren't. I think that
answers the question, what do you want on your gravestone? Always with
that,
the ass.
Is that where we're heading towards?
We always ask that, but I think that's got to be it, surely. It has to
ass
be.
Ass forever.
Always with the ass.
But I've always been lucky kind of in that I've always known what the next book's going to be.
Are you writing at the moment?
I am, but this one's difficult because it's the first piece of non-fiction I've written. I'm writing a memoir. Mm. It's kind of about me, but about me and my brother.
Okay.
Who was like 2 years younger than me, and my brother wound up becoming a drug dealer and then went to prison and then he killed himself when he was 42, which right. is about 10-11 years ago now. But it's just that story of kind of how, I mean, in some ways it's biblical, the story of two brothers, but the black sheep.
Yeah,
it's just kind of looking back over it and thinking, because we were raised by the same parents with kind of same values in the same house, and we went kind of such drastically different roads at the end. It's just kind of try to unpick a lot of that and like, why did,
Yeah.
And once you dive into it, you do see bits and moments from childhood, how he became what he became. He was a difficult guy in some ways. It's a lot of fun too sometimes.
Was he younger than you?
He was 2 years younger, yeah.
Right.
But it's I'm finding the process of writing non-fiction just incredibly difficult, because I've not done it before. A novel, I just love it.
Your writing's very, very funny as well. And your brother committing suicide is not funny.
Well, no, but that's the thing, because the book's quite long, is at the moment, and that you can't just be remorselessly, it's kind of fun too.
Yeah,
and there's kind of fun stuff along the way for both of us. But it's kind of, I just find, been married so relentlessly to facts, it's research, and because we're out of each other's lives at points, it's kind of finding out, and when you get to manage reconstructing your own life accurately is no picnic either. So it's just kind of trying to do all that research and
I'd rather have written three novels or five scripts than kind of do this.
When's your take on the Fred and Rose scenario coming?
sounds like an easier
maybe more fun than this. In fact, one of the things I quite like saying to the kids is, like, you know, Fred's line was when his children went to bed at night, he'd say, "When you go to bed at night, my life begins." Quite enjoy learning that one, the kids, but they don't know what the reference point is, obviously, and it's not really one you can explain to sort of 12-year-olds.
That's the last thing you say to them before they go to sleep. We're coming towards the end of our time, but we just want to ask a couple of questions that we like to ask. John, how would you like to be remembered?
By a 50-foot statue in Hyde fucking Park. my friend, the DJ John Carter, answered that in an interview about 20 years ago. Most people say, nice guy, did his best. Like, fuck that. Giant statue in Hyde Park.
Like Nelson's Column.
Yeah, I think if you're going to have the brass balls to think history will remember you at all, let's go big. Albert Memorial sort of type shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Right. Very good decision. Very good decision. And just before we finish, then we touched on the wake of your brother earlier on. Would you do anything different? Like, we also talked about how I'd like one that's a week long. You're going to split the difference. What's the important thing about that after party of yours?
I think free bar, no drinks, minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. You said $3,000 you'd leave behind it before.
No, that was just for drugs.
Just for the drugs.
The bar tab, you know, you got to figure you still have a credit card that was going, wouldn't you? After that, just, you know, what they're going to.
What does happen to the credit card? If you don't tell them you've died for a few months, surely you just.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. You get run it up at the funeral. And
then
does your estate,
whoever's in charge of your estate, have to pay for that?
I guess they would, yes. Right. I might write a detailed speech about how various people in the congregation have let me down over the years and have it read out by a family member.
Definitely.
Yeah. I might go down that route.
List of cunts.
Kind of like Festivus kind of thing, you know? The airing of the grievances.
I always think of spiteful things like that I'd like to do. Maybe at my funeral is the time where I can do it without feeling any guilt. That's probably a perfect way of doing it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're always very kind to your friends and family, and I think you keep your mouth shut sometimes when you shouldn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe you should just let it all out.
My only other thought was in terms of the soundtrack, like really punishing people by forcing them through an absolute kind of Torag populist playlist. Just find out what every utter douchebag half-wit in Britain has played at the funeral. Probably Angels number one.
Yes, it is number one.
I heard REM, Everybody Hurts. I'm like,
that's
pretty, you know, it's a bit on the nose, right?
It's on the nose, yeah.
It's on the nose. And maybe it was a suicide funeral job. Maybe that was specific. But anyway, it's pretty on the road. And also pretty fucking pompous. Maybe people aren't hurting. I'm like, good, glad to see the back of you. Fucking nasty.
So you would purposely make the congregation sit through terrible shit
because
people
probably spend loads of time thinking what would be Jackson Brown's late from the sky might be quite nice. No, fuck you. Here's Angels. Here's Robbie Williams. and it's getting worse from there, you know? Is there not a clip of some Scottish funeral that did the rounds of the internet a few years ago where it's like obviously somebody quite young has died and they're all shell suited up to the max? And they start banging at this mad fucking happy hardcore track. Like, by the grave. Maybe I'll go that route, you know? Crank out the crazed happy hardcore.
Make people laugh. That's right. Make people laugh around the grave.
Make them miss you. If we're going the kind of comedy route, I quite like Dead Kennedy's Too Drunk to Fuck. That'd be quite a good number to go out with. Balance with something more somber as well.
Yeah.
Angels.
Like a happy hardcore version of Angels.
It was always
such a thing probably exists.
Of course it does.
If it doesn't, Sam will have made it exist in the next 24 hours. John, thank you so much for coming to the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Do you want to tell the audience about the book, your books? What should they be reading? When's your next one coming out?
I got my current paperback of my current novel, The Fuck It List, is currently available from all good retailers, and a movie I've written called The Trip, starring Noomi Rapace, is coming on Netflix in September.
Oh, nice.
Fantastic. Guys, make sure you check that out. Please do also follow us on Instagram at @PodIt'sYourFuneral. Subscribe to us, drop us a comment and a rating in Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening to us. And if you want to send us any of your funeral stories, the email address is podit'syourfuneral@gmail.com. Thanks so much for having us to your garden, John. And
no, pleasure.
You'll be hearing from us very soon. Goodbye.
Bye. Cheers, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.